Kobe versus CWI. Ms. Breida?
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. When I was a young lad, one of my heroes used to say that the greatest thing was truth, justice, and the American way. And in a certain respect, the appellate courts and this appellate court is the guardian of the process of ensuring both truth, justice, and presumably the American way, the truth-seeking process. In Anderson, the...
Of course, I think our colleague on the district court would think he's got those same goals in mind.
Well, yes, he does.
He's a little more focused on fact-finding than we are.
He's supposed to be.
You're supposed to give a certain deference, right?
Yeah, of course you are. And I didn't mean to think that say that he's not my hero also.
Okay. nice cleanup.
Well, I wasn't sure if this opening was going to get anywhere, but I thought I'd try.
It certainly sounded good.
Well, thank you. But the point is that, you know, this really is, in our view, a case where there hasn't been a really adequate opportunity to explore the facts properly, and that issues, as the Supreme Court in Anderson said, of credibility, weighing evidence, and drawing inferences is something that really should be for the jury. Much, if not all, of what Misty Roby testified to was corroborated by other employees who would have the impetus, if anything, to be more against her than for her. And this is not just a case of a he said, she said type of scenario. There was corroboration by a number of the other employees that make up the fact background here.
So, counsel, even if we give you that there was sufficient evidence to demonstrate she was in a hostile work environment, what tangible employment action did she suffer? What adverse action? As I understand it, she's the one that just left.
Well, that's the issue. We say she didn't just leave. We say that it was a constructive discharge, that she was forced out. She couldn't stand it being with this fellow anymore, and that she was forced to leave. Unfortunately, you know, this is a young woman who's works as a cash register clerk, you know, in a not a big store, and may not have the sophistication to be able to draw a as bright a line as maybe we would like to see in terms of, you know, throwing down a gauntlet, slamming the door and saying, I quit, and so forth. But she certainly felt that she was over there, and I think the store really did, too. And at least if anybody disagrees, I think that creates a fact issue in and of itself. I knew we were in trouble when the district court opened its opinion and started talking about alleged facts. It's our position that the district court should not have referred to them as alleged facts, because all the facts must be taken as true and given deference to her. So, you know, right off the bat, we figured that was going to be a problem. Let's take a look at some of these things. Mr. Schiavone regularly poked Roby in a flirting manner. You have the incident where he's near the cash register and underneath her legs looking up. Can I get out of the way? No, I like it down here. Even the employer thought that wasn't right. He puts her arms around her shoulders. Leave me alone. He doesn't do it. He gets into, he goes to drive the truck, and then he says, I get excited because my pants got tight. You know, what's that got to do with anything at work? Well, while she's on maternity leave, there's an important lapse in the timeline here, because she was employed for a couple months, and then she was off for a couple months, and then when she came back. While she was on maternity leave, I'm going to call him the offender, said that he told another co-supervisor, I'm going to lose my job or lose my wife because of Misty Roby. Now, this is a company that had a previous a bad experience with a complaint of sexual harassment, the alarm bell should have been going off all over the place, and something should have been done then. Then when he comes back, that's when it starts to get worse. He's telling everybody, you know, how hot she is and wants to do it to her.
This is when she finally goes to the manager. She complains. Human Resources does an investigation. They don't fire him, but they give him a reprimand. He gets a 3-page written warning letter. She then complains that she wants to leave early because she's scheduled to close with him. The manager says she could be excused from work until the general manager returned from vacation, so she doesn't have to be with Roby. They told her she wouldn't be scheduled with him again, and she continued to get her regular schedule for the rest of the month without him being there, and she didn't show up for any more shifts.
I don't remember that being exactly the fact scenario.
Well, what's wrong
my
with
memory?
That? I could be wrong on it. My memory is
that she asked not to be in the same shift with him in closing the store, and that was ignored. And that by the time he had received his reprimand, he was already giving her what we might know as the evil eye. It's high school stuff, but he was doing the same thing. You can't bother me. I'm a Mason. I have all of this protection. And he's sneering at her and doing those kinds of things. And she obviously doesn't feel comfortable about being around the guy. I don't think anybody would or should. And
you're saying this behavior continued after he got the reprimand?
Yes. That's the way that I remember the testimony. I'm not saying that he was putting his arms around her shoulder or doing anything like that, but he was still trying to intimidate her. It becomes still a part of the hostile work environment, which was not really addressed by the district court at all.
So is it your position, Mr. Broider, that the employer just simply did not do enough?
The employer did not do enough, and it didn't do it early enough. The alarm...
Was there a delay between their action, what action they took, and when it was reported to them?
No, that's not the delay that I'm referring to. The delay that I'm referring to is when she's off of work on her maternity leave, and this jerk, that's what I'm going to call him, is bragging about how he wants to do her and all that kind of thing to co-supervisors who are on a management level, and they have a situation where they've had a previous problem at this store with somebody else, that the alarm bell should have been going off and somebody should have done something then. That this is...
But the previous problem, it didn't have to do with Roby, did it?
No, it did not. But it's a signal that there is an environmental problem, perhaps at this store. That's when they probably should have done something, and they probably should have done something more once they started their investigation. Because once they started their investigation, they didn't tell him he was being investigated. They were looking around. Somebody should have come up to him and said, "Hey, cool it. We're looking into something. Stay away. Just calm down." And so a lot of what went on occurred during the so-called investigation. So what happens? They tell everybody to shut up. Nobody shuts up. She's a subject of store-wide gossip. Somebody else gets in the car with her and makes not a smart remark, and he gets fired. So the jerk doesn't get fired, but the other guy gets fired. As far as I know, we'll call him the jerk. He's still there. It was too little too late. It should have been more. And we think that, your Jackson case says that the conduct, severe or pervasive, I think it's both here, but it doesn't have to be both. It has to be either. We believe that this fellow crossed the line. I think the evidence shows that. And I think that if anybody ought to decide it, it ought to be a jury, rather than making a summary kind of decision, which you have frowned upon in a number of cases, which we've cited to you, Logman, and maybe there's a half a dozen others, which I don't have to repeat to you. Things weren't too bad until He started getting physical with her. She liked working there. It's certainly not the high-paying job, but it was her job. And it was something that that she wanted to do until the situation became intolerant. There's a number of bright lines that could be drawn here, but, you know, maybe that's really up for a jury or a trier of fact to do that. The trial court did not have an opportunity to even see her, let alone determine her credibility, determine the credibility of the other people in the store, see whether or not they're lying. Are they making a joke? The reply brief tries to make light of all of this. But was it serious? Or was he really just being sarcastic when he's down on the ground looking up her skirt at the cash register? Or was he leering? How in the world can this possibly be determined by looking at a record? And so there's so much humanity involved in these cases that gets lost, and so under the circumstances of the facts, we believe that there are issues. There are issues about her termination and the way that she was terminated. We don't believe that there's any question that she quit, and even if there was, then under the Elthers and Fragner tests, which the affirmative defense that the defendants have raised, we don't believe that they've met that standard. If anybody thinks they did, I don't think it can be done as a matter of law. I think it's a question of fact as to whether or not the actions of the employee were reasonable and whether or not the actions of the employer were reasonable. I mean, isn't that what we've all learned is the test? And finally, before I sit down, I also think that there's genuine issues of material to fact dealing with questions of retaliation.
Thank you, Mr. Breuer.
Thank you.
Ms. Rosenberg.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Sonia Rosenberg, and I represent Camping World, the defendant appellee. This Court should affirm the District Court's granting of summary judgment for two reasons. First, plaintiff's sexual harassment claim fails because the record does not support a finding of a hostile work environment, but even if it did, Camping World has definitively established its Ehlers-Fairger affirmative defense. And second, plaintiff doesn't even come close to establishing either a prima facie case or pretext that could support her claim of retaliation. Turning to my first point, Ms. Roby cannot establish an actionable sexual harassment claim because she cannot meet two out of the four required elements of her prima facie case. Specifically, she cannot meet the second element, which requires her to show that the conduct was severe or pervasive enough, nor can she meet the fourth element, and that is the basis for employer liability in this case.
Well, I think you want to focus on the fourth, because you've got a real challenge, at least for me, on the second.
Your Honor, I can certainly and will address the fourth element first, but I will also address why I believe that under this Court's precedent, the facts that are properly supported by the record will not arise to a hostile work environment.
I want to alter your argument, so you go ahead with the facts on the prima facie case, and then you can... We'll deal with what interests me. Okay.
Okay. Your Honors, to address the severe or pervasive point first, Ms. Roby cannot show and has not shown that the properly supported allegations in the record amount to a hostile work environment. Though, as this Court stated in Jackson, the environment doesn't need to reach the ninth ring to be actionable, it does have to be permeated with discriminatory intimidation, ridicule, and insult. It must not only be subjectively offensive, but objectively so as well. And as this Court stated in Whitaker versus Northern Illinois University, it has to be more than relatively isolated instances of non-severe conduct. But that is all we have in this case, is relatively isolated instances of non-severe conduct. All that the record can give support for is three mild comments and three incidents of non-severe touching spread over a six-month period. Under this court's precedent, these allegations, and contrary to counsel's assertion, we do take the properly supported allegations as stated for the summary judgment purposes. The properly supported allegations under this court's precedent do not arise to a hostile work environment. For example, cases like McPherson versus Waukegan or Weiss versus Coca-Cola involved more severe, more frequent, and more sexually charged allegations than the totality of the allegations present in this case. And yet this court affirmed the district court's granting of summary judgment, finding them not to arise to hostile work environment. The facts are what they are, and they are stated in the record and in our statement of the facts. And these facts, when looked against the background of the record, and just those facts, simply do not rise to actionable hostile work environments. But, Your Honor, to address your point, even if they did, Ms. Roby has not established the fourth element of the case, and that is the basis for employer liability. As this court has stated in multiple cases, where there is no tangible employment action taken against a complainant, the Ehlers-Bergeron defense allows the employer to prevail as a matter of law so long as the employer first has taken reasonable care to prevent and correct the alleged harassing behavior, and second, plaintiff, for her part, failed to take advantage of the corrective or preventative measures offered. It is Camping World's firm position that both elements are present in this case and that the district court correctly so found. And first, Your Honor questioned counsel on tangible employment action, and I think the meaning of tangible employment action should be clarified. A tangible employment action in the context of the defense arises only if a supervisor takes an action or if constructive discharge results based on plaintiff's refusal to submit to the harassment. First, plaintiff has not alleged that any action was taken against her as a result of her refusal to submit to the harassment. But moreover, as the district court pointed out on page 11 of its opinion, Ms. Roby's claims that she was either terminated or constructively discharged are just her own self-serving assertions concerning her subjective understanding of the situation. Nothing more. The fact of the matter is the record simply doesn't support a finding of termination.
So why don't you get with the facts? Because counsel said that my recitation of the facts was not quite accurate in terms of what happened once she makes the complaint, the termination letter, and then the action that takes place.
Your Honor, first, it's undisputed in the record that all complaints of harassment by Ms. Roby were indeed investigated by Human Resources. And I should also point out about the counsel's comment that not enough was done and it wasn't timely. It was indeed timely on November 8th when store management simply happened to overhear Ms. Roby socializing with a coworker. Management immediately pulled her in the office and asked her to share her comments and to explain them. And an investigation was conducted that very same day. As part of this investigation, at least seven witnesses were interviewed. Camping World also reviewed personnel files and written statements that were submitted. And contrary to counsel assertions, it is undisputed in the record that most of Ms. Roby's allegations that she has made and that she talked about at her deposition were not witnessed and could not be corroborated by anybody. But nevertheless, Camping World still took corrective action in this case and disciplined Mr. Schiavone. The reason that there cannot be a finding of termination here is perhaps best supported by Ms. Roby's own testimony during her deposition. She testified that nobody told her that she was terminated, that in fact she did leave. That's on page 105 of her deposition. At another point of her deposition, she stated that she quit her job. At other points, she testified that she did not want to go to work anymore and that she understood herself to be on some sort of leave. These facts are simply not compatible with any straight-face argument for termination.
Yeah, but get to the specifics of this December 29th day when she asked to leave work early because she scheduled to close with Schiavone and she didn't want to be there.
Yes, Your Honor. That was actually the very first time that Ms. Roby asked not to close the store with Joe Schiavone. And the schedules that were submitted on summary judgment reflect that, in fact, she wasn't scheduled to close with him that day or any day thereafter. And that in early January, it is undisputed, Ms. Sack called Ms. Roby and told her, you're on the store schedules. Communicate with store management about returning to work. And as Your Honor pointed out, she was scheduled through the month of January. And in fact, she was paid for her regular work hours, but she simply abandoned her job. She didn't come back.
Why was she paid?
Your Honor, she was paid because Camping World really tried to do the right things in this case. It conducted a prompt, a thorough investigation. And, for example, store managers, Yarko and Heaton, ensured that at least one of them would be at the store at all times in case she had any complaints. It's consistent with Camping World's attempts in this case to make Ms. Roby truly as comfortable as possible about working and returning to work. The thought process was that perhaps she can take some extra time and come back, but when a few weeks had passed and that proved to not be the case, Camping World stopped paying her at this point and eventually had to take her off the store schedule because she had simply abandoned her job. Your Honors, in order to establish, I address that there is no termination, but in order to establish a constructive discharge, this court pointed out in Whitaker that the working conditions must be even more egregious than the high standard for hostile work environment, because absent extraordinary circumstances, a complaining employee is really expected to remain at work while seeking redress. And as stated in Robinson, a case that opposing counsel attempted to use in his argument, constructive discharge can lie only where there are official actions by a supervisor that make employment intolerable. There's simply nothing of the sort that can be supported by the record in this case. In short, Ms. Roby abandoned her employment, as the record reflects. Now, turning to the specific elements of the Ehlers-Fairger defense, Camping World did establish that it took reasonable care, and Ms. Roby did not take advantage of the preventative and corrective measures offered. As to reasonable care, it is undisputed that Camping World has a comprehensive anti-harassment policy, and Ms. Roby admitted in her pleadings that this policy exists and that she knew and understood the policy and the immediate reporting requirement, yet she didn't report. It is also undisputed that Human Resources undertook an immediate investigation on happening to overhear Ms. Roby's complaint and that proper discipline was taken. Ms. Roby may not like the results of the discipline, but it doesn't mean that it didn't take place. Again, most of her complaints could not be corroborated, but still Camping World took disciplinary action that made Mr. Schiavone realize in no uncertain terms that if any further incidents would be alleged, his job was hanging on the line and that he would be terminated.
And were there any further incidents reported?
No, Your Honor. There were no further incidents of sexual harassment. While the investigation was proceeding, Ms. Roby did make some complaints that there was some taunting going on, that he made a Mason comment to her. But these instances, it is undisputed, were investigated along with Ms. Roby's other allegations before the disciplinary action was taken against Mr. Schiavone. And the human resources manager talked to Mr. Schiavone about every single one of those instances. While there is no Camping World exercise reasonable care, Ms. Roby failed to do so, as demonstrated by the fact of her five-month delay in bringing her complaint. On page 19 of appellant's brief, counsel alleges that the most egregious comment made to Ms. Roby was made to her in early June 2005. Yet it is undisputed that it wasn't until November of 2005, 5 months later, that Camping World happened to learn of Ms. Roby's harassment because the manager overheard her socializing with another coworker. Had that not happened, the complaint might not have reached Camping World's attention. And as soon as it did, an investigation was conducted. Similarly, counsel's point that it wasn't Ms. Roby waited until the harassment allegedly turned physical to complain, that's simply contrary to the facts. She alleges that there was one incident that happened in September. Still, she didn't complain until November. Your Honors, to conclude on sexual harassment, there is not enough here to support a finding of a hostile work environment, but even if this were, Camping World has established its Sellers-Thierger affirmative defense. And as I see that my time is running a bit close, just to turn briefly on the second point that Ms. Roby's counsel really didn't address, but the retaliation point, it is Camping World's firm position that there was no retaliation in this case, and this fact is demonstrated in part by less than one page of text and not a single citation to authority that counsel decided to devote to this point. Ms. Roby cannot establish a prima facie case of retaliation because there is no adverse action here, but even if she could, she cannot show that Camping World's taking her off the schedule in March of 2006 was pretextual, nor has she tried to show that. The fact of the matter is she was finally taken off the schedule after she hadn't reported to work for some period of time. Your Honors, once the court looks past the rhetoric and some of the allegations that are not supported by the record that counsel talked about here today, the facts are really what they are in this case, and they and the law compel the conclusion that summary judgment was properly granted here. As for the sexual harassment claim, the properly supported facts do not arise to hostile work environment, and there is no evidence to support that Camping World did not establish its affirmative defense. And as our brief states with regard to retaliation, the brief explains that simply plaintiff has not met her burdens of establishing a prima facie case or of showing pretext. For these reasons, we respectfully ask this court to affirm the district court's ruling, unless Your Honors have any further questions.
Apparently not. Thank you, Ms. Rosenberg.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Breuer.
Just to bullet point a few points, and then I'll sit down. Ms. Roby did complain after the investigation started, and I invite your attention, maybe their attention, to page 54-55 of Ms. Roby's deposition, and there was touching that took place, and she complained about that. So that's one point. So the complaint was ineffective insofar as stopping that conduct, misconduct. And she's always complained about, had always complained about working with this fellow. You know, we call her Roby because it's a matter of convenience in the lawyers and judicial context of short names. But if I have a chance to argue the case in front of a jury, I'm going to call her Misty, because that's her name. Her name is Misty Roby, and she's a human being, and she was mistreated by the employment. She was mistreated by management, and she should have a chance to have her full day in court and to be able to have a say about it. And we don't think that just looking at the cold record in a case like this does justice. And that brings me back to my first slogan that I'm not going to hit on too far, but you get the point, I know. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Breuer. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.